Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. Payday loans are, depending on your point of view, either a godsend to people with little credit in need of quick cash or a highly exploitive loan sharking scheme at triple-digit interest rates that perpetuates a cycle of debt. Payday loans are short-term loans, usually to cover financial emergencies. Interest rates soar the longer it takes to repay the loans. Missouri is among the national leaders in allowing the highest rate of interest in these loans. The industry is coming under increasing scrutiny for its practices, most recently by ProPublica, the Pulitzer Prize-winning independent news organization that specializes in investigative journalism. ProPublica's focus is on payday loan industry attempts in Missouri to stymie legislative and ballot initiative attempts to cap loan rates. Joining me by phone to talk about it is ProPublica reporter Paul Keel. His stories have been appearing in the Post-Dispatch. In studio is Jim Sajeda, who is president of the board of Metropolitan Congregations United, or MCU, which was active in an unsuccessful petition drive to cap payday loan interest rates in Missouri. A little later, we'll be joined by Reverend Starkey Wilson, president and CEO of the Deaconess Foundation and pastor of St. John's United Church of Christ. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us. Paul, are you there?
I am, yeah.
All right. Well, let me start with you, Paul, for the first couple of minutes. Tell us why you put this focus on Missouri in this series of yours.
Well, it was an amazing sequence of events there. I mean, the thing about covering this industry is that every state is its own little world because these companies are regulated at the state level, largely not on the federal level. So, you know, for instance, Texas is kind of the Wild West, but then you have Arkansas nearby that has a cap in its constitution and has had an aggressive attorney general. So there's very, very little payday lending in the state. So you kind of have to zoom in on the state level all around. And this was just a remarkable, effort to get the cap in and a very clear view into, you know, just how hard this industry will fight when they feel themselves under threat.
I have a number here that I just want to corroborate with you, and that is that in Missouri, the average interest rates on these payday loans is 455%.
That's right. That's reported by the state. So that's a state number, and they use that. They just average what the reports from the payday loan companies are. So, yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, and the second part of that is, you know, national study by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has shown that it's above the national average, and that is because a number of other states have stricter rules in how they can loan and what they can charge.
How does the industry justify these rates?
Generally, it's kind of a two-prong argument. Is one, we need to charge these rates in order to pull a profit, and then two, it's this argument generally that this customer base, which, you know, tends to be either like low-income people or people with bad credit, wouldn't have anywhere else to go if it weren't for us. And, you know, we're better than other things that could get caught up in, for instance, like, you know, illegal payday lending operations, operating offshore, or they could get hit by, you know, fees from their bank for overdrafting their check account. That's the main argument that they make.
What about the responsibility of the borrower? It seems to me that there has to be a finger pointed in that direction at some point.
Yeah, and I think, I think you have to step back and see how these companies make money and what's really happening. And there's really good data now to show that where the profits really come from are the people who get stuck in these over and over and over again. So, for instance, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau found that 3/4 of payday lenders' revenue came from borrowers who were taking out 10 or more loans in a 12-month period. So the money is not coming from the people who are using these, you know, maybe 1 to 4 times a year, which is kind of what the pitch is from the industry, that this is used for emergency. But surveys have shown that people are using this, you know, just because they're barely getting by. And then once they get the loan, they have trouble paying it off. So they get caught paying it over and over and over again.
Perhaps it would be a good idea at this particular time to have you tell us how this works. I mean, if they do borrow 8 or 9 times or 10 times a year or more even, how the interest accumulates.
Right. So the typical loan is a 2-week loan. So you walk into the office and you borrow, let's just say, to be simple, $100. And they'll say, okay, you have to pay a $20 fee with $100. It's due in 2 weeks. And so 2 weeks come along, the person might have either given the lender access to their bank account so they can withdraw it automatically, or maybe they gave a check that was, you know, dated 2 weeks in the future for them to check to cash for the full amount. And what happens a lot is that after that 2 weeks go by, you know, this person was squeezed 2 weeks ago, they're still squeezed, they can't pay the full amount, so they'll just pay what the fee is. They'll pay the $20, and then, you know, that'll happen, you know, and they have another 2 weeks to pay it off. And so that's one way people get trapped in these, is they just end up paying the fee over and over and over again until, you know, sometimes what they've paid in fees is a multiple of what they actually originally borrowed.
And boy, that obviously adds up, and very, very quickly, to these numbers that we've already talked about. There are alternatives out there at the present time. We talk about payday loans, but we're seeing an awful lot of advertising here for auto title loans. And we hear talk, particularly in your articles, on installment loans. What are installment loans?
Yeah, so, well, quickly, auto title loan is actually very similar to a payday loan. That's usually a 30-day loan, but the difference is you give them title to your car and often the keys to your car so they can take it if you don't pay your loan. An installment loan is, you know, on the face of it, it sounds a lot better. You know, you usually have something like a 5 or 7 month period to pay down the loan. The rate will typically be lower. So, for instance, in Missouri, the biggest installment lender will charge 200% interest over for a loan over 5 months or so, as opposed to over 400% interest for a payday loan. But what I was able to show in my stories is they work very similar in that instead of having people just, you know, roll the loan over every 2 weeks, what they want people to do is, yeah, you take out a 7 month loan, but they really want you to come in after 2 months and take out a little bit more money and kind of use it like a credit card. And that has the effect of keeping people in these loans, not paying, you know, they're paying largely interest and not the principal. And they also don't realize how much interest they're paying because of the way they calculate it, and it's very front-loaded in interest and fees and that sort of thing. So on the face of it, it sounds a lot better because you're paying down this money over time, but people get stuck in them much the same way.
What's the worst case scenario that you've heard, with whether it's Missouri or elsewhere, in terms of the harm that it's done to the borrowers?
Well, people end up in bankruptcy, very typically. You know, people, I mean, there was some controversy because they were using the courts to go after people in worst-case scenarios. I mean, you know, people end up, you're basically just, you're pushing today's problem to be a much larger problem in the future. So instead of just being a little bit short, you end up being, you know, milked for fees and stuff like that over a much longer period of time. So you have people who, I mean, I had a case for an installment loan woman in Georgia, and this is where payday loans are illegal, but these installment loan companies are still very successful. There's over 1,000 locations in the state. And she had been with this one company. She was a retiree. She's paying from Social Security. She, over 10 years, she had two different loans. She paid over $20,000 to this company. And she still hadn't paid off the loan, which still had an outstanding balance amount of $2,000. So, you know, it's sometimes the damage can be, you know, kind of over time like that, and sometimes it's, you know, it's immediate and can provoke like a crisis.
I was struck in reading your pieces at how little comment you were able to generate from the industry itself. Nobody wanted to talk to you, apparently.
Particularly with the payday lending industry, I was able to get some comment from the installment lending industry because, like I say, particularly in Missouri, their pitch was, well, we're different from payday loans. So they've been a little bit more vocal. I mean, the payday loan industry, they do have their national association. We had a good comment from them. But when you start asking individual companies, like, you know, why are you charging this sort of interest on this type of loan and this sort of thing, didn't get much of a response. You're right.
How about Illinois? I have something from one of your pieces here with regard to the average income of people who make these loans. But did you take much of a look at Illinois?
Yeah, I looked at Illinois because they, you know, different states have different laws for these companies, and they have to report different things. So Illinois, for instance, they have to report what the income level is of people. So for payday loans, it was a little over 50%, I believe, of people who were earning $30,000 or less. And for installment lenders, again, these companies are supposedly, you know, much better for consumers. Over 70% of their customers were earning $30,000 or less, and that just shows what their customer base is. People, you know, the working poor, people who are just getting by, people who are on Social Security and that sort of thing, are largely their customer base.
Okay, let me give you a chance to catch your breath a little bit because I want to bring Jim Sajeda into the conversation. Jim, have you heard anything so far that surprises you?
Not at all. This industry, basically, I consider them as nothing more than loan sharks, people who actually, businesses that are in this industry really are preying on the poor, is what they're doing. You know, once you're trapped in this cycle of the payday loan industry, you're trapped. It's been referred to as something like a drug addiction, something that once you get into it, it's almost impossible to ever get out. And, you know, again, like it was said before, the people that are targeted for these payday loans are making $25,000 a year or less. And, you know, when I go in to take a payday loan, okay, it's not like if you or I go into a bank. If you and I go into a bank to make a loan, they're going to look at our credit score. They're going to look at our ability to pay back the loan before we're ever made a loan. None of that's considered. All you have to have to get a payday loan is a checking account and a job. Doesn't matter how much you make, but those are the two criteria to get that loan. And once you do get the loan, it's due back in 2 weeks. And so if you're taking out a payday loan, the chances of your being able to pay that back in 2 weeks are slim and none. So,
is there anything positive that can be said about the payday loan?
Well, you know, basically what we want to do, we didn't want to eliminate the payday loan industry. But, you know, what we tried to do with our petition drive is to put a cap of 36%, which I think is a fair rate.
Let me just back you up a little bit so that people understand exactly what you're saying. In 2012, there was an attempt at a ballot initiative in the state of Missouri to do exactly what you say, cap payday loan interest rates at 36%.
Yes, yes.
Okay, now that folks understand that, go
sure,
ahead.
Okay. So what we wanted to do is, you know, because it does meet a need, we thought doing that still makes the payday loan industry there and available to people who need it. But, you know, I think it was mentioned before, they do have other alternatives, such as going to credit card, to stores that do, you know, not banks, but the...
I'm not sure what you do.
They can go to either who they're indebted to and trying to work out an agreement, or go to credit unions.
Oh, cool. All right.
Credit unions. They can basically, there's something about getting secured credit cards that are available to people that are in debt. Looking at advances from employers. So there's a number of alternatives. But once you're in this, basically it's devastating to people because you never – there's no way out, you know.
I think Governor Nixon just recently signed signed legislation that banks can now offer short-term loans. Rates are capped – rates cap fees at $75 or 10% of the loan's value, which – still sounds fairly high, but it's much better than the other. I have to take a break. We'll come back. I want to see from our friend Paul Keel if he sees anything at all positive in these payday loans, but I have to take that break now. We'll do so and invite your calls also at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org or send us a tweet at STL on air. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We are about to continue our conversation on payday loans in Missouri. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following. Illinois state officials are holding a public meeting tonight in Sauget to discuss the potential damage to natural resources due to the release of hazardous substances. Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan and Senate President John Cullerton are participating in a court hearing today. They're trying to force the governor and controller to issue paychecks to legislators. There's also a court hearing in Illinois about whether to dismiss a case challenging the state's ban on same-sex marriage. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon at 3 for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation on payday lending. My guest joining us from New York is ProPublica reporter Paul Keel. He has reported on payday lending. You've been reading his reports in the Post-Dispatch. Jim Sahade is with me in studio. He's president of the Board of Metropolitan Congregations Limited, or MCU. Paul, back to you. Do you see anything at all positive in this whole payday loan thing?
Well, I think when you have a state like Missouri that has extremely loose regulations, it's kind of hard to make a good argument that they're offering what they say they're offering, which is to say, you know, a short-term loan for someone who's in distress and just needs to get over, one crisis. There's a lot of surveys have shown that people are using this, for ongoing stuff, like they're constantly shorter every month and that sort of thing. So if you step back and look at, who's using it, why they're using it, the industry's argument kind of goes away. But I should say that there are states that have very tightly regulated how they can do this. So, for instance, Washington has a law that says you can only get 8 payday loans per year. That's the law. And when they put that into effect, the number of payday loans in the state dropped by 2/3. They don't regulate what they can charge, but they do regulate you can only give these, you can't go to another payday lender because there's a database that the state runs. Another state, Colorado, basically turned these that are paid out over a number of months. Everything is highly regulated. So when people are getting these loans, they're not allowed to get another loan unless they pay that one off and sort of thing. So there are ways to very tightly control it if you want to have this sort of option available to people. But again, unless those circumstances are in effect, it's hard to believe that that's the industry's arguments reflect reality.
Just for the sake of conversation, you mentioned Washington State with capping the number of loans at 8. I think the average in Missouri is 9. That can still run up a significant bill, can't it?
Yeah, no, it's expensive for people. It just stops the cycle because in one of the pieces I published, I published Washington State's data from 2009, and there was a number of borrowers who were taking out 20 loans a year, and it was a significant number of the portion of loans that were taken out by borrowers. So people really get stuck and they can't get out. And so that, that's not a law that the, activists or consumer advocates in Washington State thought was the best law they could get. It was a law that passed the legislature because they kept on trying to pass the rate, and this happened in Missouri and happens in a lot of different state houses. The industry is very successful in being very generous with campaign donations. They hire the best lobbyists. Nothing tends to happen, or it's pretty rare for stuff to happen at the state house level. And there's different ways people have tried to get around that. In Missouri, it was the ballot initiative process. In Texas, you have cities passing ordinances, Dallas, San Antonio, Austin, that are limiting how people get out payday loans, and they're trying to get all these different cities to sign on board eventually to force the hand of the state legislature to finally regulate these things.
Is that what it boils down to in Missouri, simply the fact that the industry is so powerful and is spending so much money lobbying that the legislature has just become inert on the issue?
Yeah, I mean, that is why this ballot initiative process got launched. I mean, if there had been some sort of meaningful, in the eyes of consumer advocates, regulation passed, I don't think that there would have been the momentum for it.
Well, let's talk a little. I'll start with you. Talk a little bit about this initiative. An awful lot of pressure, in your, as indicated in your reports, was brought to bear to stymie this thing. Give us an overview of that.
Sure. So what happened was, this was initially filed back in the summer of 2011, and immediately the main industries who would be affected, mainly the payday industry and the installment lending industry, form two different organizations that are, basically committee-type organizations. And for the payday lenders, it was Missourians for Equal Credit Opportunity, and for installment lenders, it was Stand Up Missouri, two names that sound like great things. And they immediately filed lawsuits to challenge, how this was worded in the petitions. That was one avenue they used. And then they also filed what I call decoy petitions, for instance, one that would have capped the rate of 14%, except when there was an agreed, contract that said otherwise, which is another way of saying it wouldn't have done anything at all. It made it sound like it was going to cap rates at 14%, but it really would have done nothing. And the payday lending group spent almost $1 million hiring signature gatherers who are going around to get signatures for this and another type of initiative that would have not affected, that would not have capped the rate. So they were doing that. Eventually, the employees that they had hired moved from trying to gather signatures for these bogus initiatives to simply just trying to stop people from getting signatures. So they were, kind of massing. They were following whenever like an employee was going around, particularly in Springfield, trying to get signature for this cap initiative. There were 3-4 employees for the payday lending side, calling the initiative illegal or just shouting, and constantly
disrupting.
Being somewhat, just disrupting things. And, the example I have in the piece is, a woman who's a minister in an Episcopal church, and she went down to Springfield, and people were shouting in her face and that sort of thing. So it was a common fact of life down there, and it happened in other places as well, not just Springfield. And then there were letters sent to clergy members who signed on, basically telling them that they could go to jail for being involved in this petition effort. They could lose their tax exempt status. Those are letters that went to a number of clergy members. Some of them got follow up phone calls saying, "Hey, did you get the letter? Are you sure this is a good idea to get involved with this effort?" And then finally, the other major avenue, I would say, would be a real effort by both the installment lenders and the payday lending industry to make inroads with the African American community by hiring either very high priced lobbyists or there's a guy named Willie Green, who's a former NFL wide receiver who has been kind of the community representative for the payday lending industry going back a decade. And he went to both Kansas City and St. Louis to kind of make his pitch. And, as we understand it, also to say, hey, are there other issues in your community that maybe we, the payday lending industry, could help with, which people took as, maybe if you weren't so active in this petition, we might, help you with some other issues that your community is facing. So it was, and they spent over $3 million all told on these various ways of undermining the petition process, and the petition ended up falling just a little over 200 signatures short, and the district, actually, District 1, which includes North St. Louis, despite having in total more than enough signatures, and that's just the way that the petition process works.
And some of the petitions actually were stolen from a car, as I understand it from one of your reports.
Leave that out. So yeah. There was an organizer in Springfield who had his car broken out into, and about 3,000 signatures were taken. There's never an arrest made, so that's who the perpetrator was exactly. You can't say, but it led to kind of a frantic last minute effort for people came from all over the state, from St. Louis, from Kansas City down to Springfield to try to make up that the lost signatures.
Sure, that's clearly was an illegal act. But with regard to the other things that you mentioned, were there no criminal charges made for any of these other tactics that were used?
Well, I think I we didn't assert in the piece that anything was illegal here. Certainly, it's legal to lobby. It's legal to offer to make charitable donations. It's maybe the letter to clergy would be the closest thing I think that would walk to anything. But it was sent by a law firm in Texas, so I'm sure it's very heavily lawyered to say that.
Sure.
I'm not saying anything besides, obviously, the break-in there. And I should say there was a lawsuit about, harassing petition gatherers, initiative signature gatherers. But, we have a First Amendment in this country, so basically the payday loan group argued, well, even if we're cursing in your face all day, that's protected speech under the Constitution.
Sure.
So,
Let me get some input on this part of it from Jim Sahidis sitting across from me here. What kind of pressure were you under during your participation in all of this, Jim?
Well, actually, what was just reported is what happened. Basically, especially when we went down to Springfield, there was a real opposition that was there and who were confrontive, assaultive, basically in your face, and who were just really doing everything that they could to stop the petition drive. And so, yeah, you know, I mean, for their determination to keep this payday loan industry going, and they put over $2 million in their efforts to stop this campaign. And, you know, we did a survey of the voters in Missouri, and we knew that over 60%, if this got on the ballot, would support passing a provision to cap the rate at 36%. So they knew that it was very important to stop this, so they did everything that they possibly could to do that.
I want to take a moment to have you listen to an interview I did just a few minutes before we went on the air with Reverend Starsky Wilson, President and CEO of the Deaconess Foundation and pastor of St. John's United Church of Christ. He helped in that ballot initiative to cap the interest rates at 36%, and he talked to me about the pressure that he was under during this campaign.
I think it was mostly in response to the fact that our congregation was already working on the issue, that one of the lobbyists reached out to me through an acquaintance and asked if I would sit down and talk with them, particularly about the installment loan component, seeking to distinguish installment loans from payday loans. And making the case that that was a necessary means of credit in the community, particularly among not just the most impoverished, but even some middle-class African-Americans particularly. So that was what that was really about, was trying to make the case to me that this was a necessary component of our economy. And as was described in the article, there were a couple of lobbyists there whom we know from different aspects of their work in the community. And I was one of several people who were kind of in this kind of trail of conversations that they had throughout the day.
Did you feel in any sense threatened by this?
No, I didn't feel threatened in any way. I mean, there was nothing that, there was no way in which they could bring to bear any challenges or consequences to me, I saw. So I didn't feel threatened. I didn't feel the greatest deal of respect in that. I just thought that the arguments they were making were not very strong. We knew, and as I shared in that conversation, the installment loan industry had operated without the same kind of regulation and operated profitably in Missouri in the early 90s before some of the deregulation kind of happened, where they were able to charge these high percentage rates. So the fact that they were making a case that they would have to go away because they couldn't charge 1,900% interest rates was a little bit laughable. So I felt condescended to. I didn't feel threatened.
I'm sure you got involved in all of this because members of your congregation, I'm assuming this, were victimized, if I can use that word, by these exorbitant interest rates and these kinds of loans.
Yeah, absolutely. I had one congregant in particular told her story to the congregation last year on Palm Sunday. We actually took a march from our congregation, Palm Sunday march from our congregation and building to a payday loan place. And one of our members there shared her story of having entered into a payday loan and the interest rate over the years having cycled and increased to where it got to the point where she actually lost her home. So the face of this reality was right there in our pews every Sunday. And she felt empowered to actually get involved. She was one of the leading kind of signature gatherers in the life of our congregation. So it was empowering for her to get involved in the campaign, to be on the other side, to help to cap these payday lending rates.
In any sense, can you say that loans like this do perform a certain service in emergency cases, that some people who can't get credit do at least have access to it on an emergency basis?
One could say that. I would not say that because I believe in the power of the resources that we gather as a community. Our congregation was also part of a study some years ago about the access to resources that people have because they're in a community, and some of those are financial and material, and some of those are just access to a kind of professional or other kinds of resources. So I believe that the power of community being brought to bear by people being together in churches, and small groups, and book clubs and the like, I mean, all of these things create a network that allow us access to where we don't need these kinds of these kind of predatory tools. So I think we have many more alternatives in the community than this.
I think there is going to be another attempt at this ballot initiative, probably in 2014. Will you be involved in that if it happens?
Absolutely. We will definitely be involved until this happens. One of the things that we have learned, number one, I believe we won. We got enough signatures last time. Those signatures were challenged. And very honestly, what happened was after we came back and verified signatures, we were able to find some gaps in the system, very honestly, some capacity issues for dealing with this. So we know to be ready to verify signatures on the back end after we gather enough on the front end. We know to gather more than we actually need, and we have a sense of those margins. And we also know that we need to be prepared to fight the legal battles that will come to challenge the signatures. They are raising more money. They have spread more money out in the community. So we don't expect that this will be easy, but we will be able to build on the infrastructure that we had in 2012 and encourage others to be a part of this campaign as well.
Of course, it doesn't help to have a bunch of the petitions stolen.
Exactly. I mean, so again, we know how many more. We have a sense of how many more we need to get. We have a sense of what kind of security we're going to need. I mean, these are unfortunate strategies and nefarious in some cases that we just have to be ready to respond to with the strength of public will, with great organization, and with the moral authority that God desires for people to be cared for and have abundant life. And this is stripping our community, and in the case of our neighborhood, stripping whole swaths of our community from the economic stability that they need and should have access to.
That is Reverend Starsky Wilson, President and CEO of the Deaconess Foundation and pastor of St. John's United Church of Christ, talking about the pressure that he underwent during the petition drive back in 2012. Of course, Paul Keel, none of what he said came as news to you because you spent some time talking to him for your pieces.
That's right, yeah. I guess I would amplify one of the points he had was that, or I think Jen might have said this, is that, you know, there was indications that if this, if they were to get the required signatures and move to actually being on the ballot in 2012, the chances were very good that this would have passed. And this has happened, like in Ohio is probably the best example. The industry put in $20 million, over $20 million, to try to get it. After the Ohio legislature banned payday loans or high-cost payday loans, they tried to get a ballot initiative through. They lost. Pretty spectacularly, they lost almost 2-1. Arizona had a similar type of initiative. The payday loan industry lost. They lost in Montana. So there's a lot of there's a lot of examples of this. So I think they were really concerned about it getting to that point. And if it had got to that point, you would have seen a lot of ads on TV about this initiative. They would have poured even more money into the state.
I have to take another break, but Jim, to say, hey, you told me before we went on the air that they've already begun collecting money, that is the industry, for a campaign in 2014.
That's correct.
Getting ready.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Paul?
Yes, they're ready if forward.
Yeah, they have $500,000 amassed already for, the campaign, and that's just probably a beginning for them in terms of the money that they will spend.
All right. Well, will there be a campaign in 2014?
I believe there will be. MCU is basically a faith-based organization that works on issues that affect the poor. And one of the things that we really feel, this is a moral issue that we really have to be engaged in. We have a new pope, and he's really talked about I'm Catholic. MCU is basically an interfaith organization. I guess because I am Catholic, I look at it from the Catholic social justice perspective. And basically, this is a pro-life issue.
All right. Well, we'll take a break now and come back and continue this conversation. You just heard from Jim Sajeda, who is president of the board of the Metropolitan Congregation United. Joining us from New York is ProPublica reporter Paul Keel, who has been reporting on Missouri payday lending. Back in just a moment. We'll take your calls, I promise, as soon as we come back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again. Welcome back to our conversation. We're talking about payday loans, and I think it was Paul who indicated earlier the large number of payday loan stores that are just all over the state of Missouri. We certainly see them everywhere we go in the St. Louis metropolitan area. But Jim Sajeda, you put it an interesting way just a moment ago.
There's actually 1,040 stores, and you know, that's more stores than all the McDonald's and Starbucks in Missouri combined, which just is staggering.
Well, if you keep your eyes open for them, you don't have any trouble finding them, that's for sure. Let's go to the phones. We'll start with Ed, who's been waiting very patiently, calling from Kirkwood. Ed, thanks for being with us. Go ahead. Okay, we seem to be having some problems with the phones, but fortunately the Internet seems to be working. I've got a couple of tweets and emails here. Tweet from Kate. The way to use payday loans is to pay the loan off when due. Do not extend it, then take another loan right away if needed. Paul Keel, that's easier said than done in the kind of cases that we've been talking about throughout this program.
Right. I mean, it's always advisable to pay off loans that you take out. So the question is whether you can do so or not. So Yeah. I'll say to that.
An email here from Marla. She says at St. Louis Community Credit Union, they have a loan available that brings together all owed payday loans so an individual can pay the credit union at a set rate. Sounds like a pretty good plan. Jim, you're nodding your head very, very affirmatively.
That makes sense. It really makes sense. And you're going to be paying a fair interest rate at a credit union. So it does make sense.
All right. Email from Jerry, who is stating the obvious here, but he puts it in a way that's very easy to understand. All of this is just another example of how expensive it is to be poor in the United States. Hopefully we can get our phones back and get some of those people who were trying to get to us a moment ago. You know, Paul Keel, whatever happened to usury laws? When I came to Missouri a long time ago, the usury rate was 11%. It just simply went away. What's going on?
Yeah, it happened all over the country. I think the short answer is you had a spike in interest rates, particularly in the 70s and 80s, and that led to a lot of deregulation around the state for defensible reasons that, you know, the going rate was much higher than what was allowed under state law. And then there was a big Supreme Court decision, I believe in the early 80s, that basically allowed banks to import whatever the state law and the home state allowed, which is why you see like a lot of banks, for instance, in South Dakota, is because they were one of the first to trailblaze and have very, very high rates allowed. So then you started seeing like a lot of credit card lending, and what happened with payday lending is it basically started, the industry was created basically in the early 90s, more or less, and then there was a big push just to change state laws all over the country, and they were successful in a number of states, you know, making the argument that this is, you know, a good product for people who, you know, need credit in an emergency and don't have access to, you know, more conventional forms of credit like a credit card. So they were able to get laws passed around the country, and that's kind of the short version of how we ended up with this much laxer regulatory system that we have statewide and nationwide.
And unfortunately, you know, I think we have a state legislature that seems to be really vulnerable to these lobbyists who have a lot of money. And the payday loan industry lobbyists have no problem basically, you know, providing funding to these legislators. So we know nothing's going to happen through the state legislature in terms of any kind of change, positive change in this regard.
Money talks in politics these days, no question about it. I think we have our phones back in operation. Let's bring in Elizabeth. Are you there, Elizabeth?
I am.
Go ahead, please. Thanks for coming back.
Okay. I just want to ask a question. Aren't these payday lenders connected to big banks such as Chase Bank? I heard that somewhere. I'm not sure it's absolutely true. And I also wondered, why is our Attorney General allowing this to happen? I mean, he seems to be pretty good at going after corrupt businesses. So those are my questions. Thank you.
All right. Can you answer that, Paul?
Yeah. I mean, with regard to the tie to the big banks, I mean, the large payday lenders do rely on big banks for financing. So there is that. A separate issue is there are some banks that have payday-like type products that are called deposited advance products. And actually, I don't know about Missouri, know whether those are offered in Missouri as well. But so that's an issue that's been ongoing and might be what she's thinking of. With regard to why the Attorney General wouldn't go after these, I mean, Jay Nixon, you know, currently the governor, was Attorney General and has very skeptical you know, view of payday lending, but the question is, are they violating state law? And if you have incredibly lax state laws, then you can't expect the Attorney General to go after someone who's operating under the law.
We have a caller who couldn't stay who was asking in connection with this, why is there no federal regulation for this industry?
Yeah, so the you know, this Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which was created by the big financial regulation bill in 2010, one of their Congress said you must look at the payday lending industry. So they are taking a close look at it, and I've given some stats that have come from some of the studies they've done. The big but there is that Congress said, yes, look at this, but no, you're not allowed to cap the rate. So if we're going to have a national cap, it would have to come through Congress. The CFPB can't just do that by, you know, through some sort of administrative rule or whatever like that, which means that even if they were to pass some regulations, for instance, in how people can use these payday loans, in a state like Missouri that has such lax regulations, we've seen, and I have, this is one of the stories that I did on this topic, was they just moved to different types of products that are not included by whatever regulations there are. So, and you've seen this in Illinois and in New Mexico, they just shift to what they call installment loans, but have sometimes like the same annual rates, like 400%, or New Mexico, there's a crazy example of over 1,000%. So that's why something like the initiative capping the rate, you know, would be important.
And if Congress gets into the act, well, we all know how effective Congress has been on just about anything in the last couple of years.
Senator Dick Durbin from Illinois has had a bill to cap the national rate at 36%, and it really hasn't gone anywhere the last several years.
But what is the magic in the number 36%? I mean, that's a pretty hefty interest rate.
It is a hefty interest rate. It's a number that's been kind of goes back. There's a history to it. It's kind of like the maximum defensible interest rate on moral grounds, really. You know, at this point, we have, you know, a subprime credit card is 25% rate. So that's kind of, you know, what the bottom end of more conventional credit is at. So, you know, consumer advocates have really rallied around this number. There are states that have lower caps. Like, for instance, Arkansas has a 17% cap. But you see a lot of even more conventional credit card rates that are above that.
And Jim, of course, if you have a cap at 36%, it doesn't mean you have to go to 36%.
Right.
You could also go to 6 if you chose to. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's bring in Ed now. We tried to get him a little while ago. He's calling from Kirkwood. Go ahead, Ed. You're on the air, I hope.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
My question is, if there's profits to be made at a lesser interest rate or terms less onerous than what the payday lenders are offering, why is there nobody jumping into the market? Where's the competition, and why aren't free market forces solving the problem?
Paul?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the answer to that is, you know, what they're doing is very profitable, and it's allowed them to be everywhere. So there are other credit options out there, and, you know, someone like a credit union has an interest not in just making a profit, but of also, you know, having a role in the community. You know, it's not an easy problem. Like, how do you give credit to someone who has bad credit or very little credit history, make sure that, you know, they are responsible with how they pay back the loan, this sort of thing, you know, doing underwriting, all these sorts of issues. I mean, there's a reason why these people have a harder time getting credit is because they're more of a credit risk. So the way that, you know, payday lenders have solved this problem is, we'll just charge them a lot more, and then some people won't be able to pay it back, but we'll still make a profit. So it's an issue that's I don't think you should admit that it's kind of a tough issue, but you also have to be alert to people abusing, you know, vulnerable consumers in various ways.
We'll keep going with these phone calls, and this time it's going to be Dan, who is going to bring up the credit union issue again, I believe. Go ahead, Dan.
Yes, the last questioner kind of took my thunder, but are there any governmental initiatives that could be taken that would encourage credit unions? So you're kind of going around the cap on the interest rate charged by encouraging or helping out community credit unions so that they could fill this gap.
Jim, do you have any insight into that? I know you mentioned the credit unions before and the role they can play.
You know, I do know there's discussion within the credit union industry to work on this and to try and, you know, alleviate some of this, you know, where people who are dealing with these kinds of issues of getting a loan and the difficulty to make it more available to them. So there's something that is being done in that regard.
Do you have any knowledge of that, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably a good example, even though it's not in this country, is so England has also been struggling with this problem. And so the Archbishop, who's also in the House of Lords there, has launched this massive effort to try to get the Church of England to put a lot of, to you know, have a push in this regard, to have a lot more credit union opportunities. You know, and the question there is, you know, people have to know about this, and, you know, are these credit unions ever going to be as omnipresent as these payday, you know, loan or auto title places? I mean, the virtue that these places have to people who are in an emergency is they don't really ask a lot of questions. You know, you walk in, you walk out 10 minutes later with the cash that you need. I think it's a real problem. I haven't seen a good example of anyone out competing these guys. You can see examples of them being tightly regulated and, you know, being part of an ecosystem that has a lot more, fewer traps for consumers. But just to say that you're going to have a better option and you don't need to limit how they're charging people or how they're operating, even if they're on every street corner, I think is problematic.
Who are these people? Are they local entrepreneurs? Are they part of national chains? What do we know about the connecting the dots between some of these companies?
Yeah, the biggest ones are national companies. Some of them are even public companies traded on stock exchanges, both payday lenders and installment lenders. The auto title lenders tend not to be very public, so it's hard to get more information about their industry, and it might be just because there's, you know, people taking people's cars in the middle of the night is not maybe shadier business. I don't know. But, they're big companies. I mean, the biggest installment lenders has a market capitalization of about $1 billion. There are similarly sized payday lenders. So they're big, sophisticated companies that operate all over the country. They have a lot of resources, which is why they can do what they can do in, you know, for instance, the Missouri State Legislature in terms of campaign contributions and lobbyists. So it's not, you know, there are mom-and-pop type places, but the ones with the real power are the national chains.
These auto title loans, is that the way it works? Do they actually at some point come and take your car? I mean, is that the payoff for them? They take your car and then sell it?
Yeah, well, it means less risk for them. So they do tend to charge a little bit less than payday lenders, but there's obviously a big catch there in that you are putting your car there as collateral. And they do take your car sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes. Is that a common occurrence or not?
It happens, you know, good numbers are hard to come by, but, I mean, I did a story about a member of the Marines in South Carolina who got caught up with one of these companies, and they took his car in the middle of the night. So, I mean, if you're giving someone your keys as part of the transaction, you should probably be ready for them to come after you.
Our time is beginning to wind down, and Jim, I want to come back to you with regard to your organizations becoming involved in this. We heard from Starsky Wilson, Reverend Wilson, about what he was hearing from the Pew. What were you hearing as an organization that caused you to get involved?
Well, you know what? Basically, when we did this petition drive, we went to fish fries at a lot of churches during the period of Lent, and when people knew what we were trying to do to cap this payday loan rate at 36%. And when they heard about the exorbitant interest rates, it could go up to, you know, 2,000%. Basically, we had no trouble getting signatures. We had 175,000 Missourians sign the petition, and we only needed 95,000. But because of, you know, some particular things that happened, they invalidated signatures that we don't think should have been invalidated locally here in St. Louis City. We failed. But Missourians basically aren't going to, I think, stand for this, and I think will support another petition drive.
Paul, we've heard interest rates here up to 1,900, 2,000% that Jim just mentioned. What's the highest rate that you've ever heard of in your research?
In one of my pieces, I have a loan that's about 1,100% in New Mexico. I mean, more typical is in the 300 to 500 range with regard to payday loans, but they do get up to 800%. And obviously, any cap that's like 19% is effectively no cap at all.
Sure. Well, our time is just – do you want to leave us with a final thought, Paul?
No, I would – I think it's been a great discussion, and interesting to see if this same thing, you know, deja vu all over again with the next drive.
We'll see. Final thought from you, Jim. We only have a few seconds left.
We're ready, and we're going to be out there again.
All righty. Well, 2014 is what we're looking at from everything that I've heard. ProPublica reporter Paul Keel, thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations, by the way, on the good work you did on this story. I think it's an important one, and people should really know what's going on. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah,
Jim Saeta, President of the Board of Metropolitan Congregations United, or MCU, thank you so much for being with us, too, and we'll look forward to hearing how you pursue this story as it develops. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And we'll be back again tomorrow, and tomorrow on the program we'll talk with Professor Farida Jalozai about the possibility of a female president and other issues related to women in politics. Very timely discussion there. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.